Recently, the Minister for Agriculture and Fisheries, Michael Creed, announced details of a tie-up scheme to aid fishermen during the COVID crisis. It's a scheme that's been widely criticised, but he and his department have defended it. Castle Danbair in West Cork is the biggest fishing port in the southwest and one of the biggest in the country. I went there a few days ago to meet fishermen, to take a look over a few trawlers and to hear how the worldwide lockdown was affecting the Irish fishing industry. This is what I found.
Hi Fergal, my name is Patrick Murphy. I'm the CEO of the Irish South and West Fish Producers Organisation. We're based in Castletown Bear and we're actually standing on the pier here now looking at the many, many boats that are tied up.
It's a very windy day. There's a storm out there, so all of these boats have come in.
Yeah, they had no choice to come in, Fergal, because as you said, you know, it's tough enough to go out there and fish. It's worse when you have to go out there in bad weather. And it's just unimaginable to go out there and fish in bad weather, risk your lives and not get properly paid for it, you know.
This is what I would call the front line of the fishing battle over COVID. You have a lot of problems, a lot of issues.
Yeah, look, the markets have collapsed all over Europe. There is no place to sell the fish and get a decent price in return for your fish, even though you don't see that on the counters of a lot of the retail outlets, but that is the way it is at the moment, and it's very hard to ask boats to go to sea, risk their lives and not have a decent wage at the end of it when they come back or cover their costs.
You have an issue with the minister's tie-up proposals, the money he's made available.
Yeah, we feel it's just not enough, you know, it's not retrospective, so it doesn't go back to allow for them to cover the boats that the losses they incurred with the last 6 months. It's only for June, July and August, and even at that they have to have their farms in before the 27th of this month or they miss the deadline. There is not enough money in the pot to justify a boat knowing that if he ties to the pier wall he's going to be losing money. He's just not going to cover his bills, so he's forced to go to sea and hope that when he comes in the market will have picked up and he'll get something for his fish. It's a week-to-week business. What you earned last week is gone, it's spent, and there's bills coming in the door all the time. These boats don't stand still. You have to paint, maintenance, you have insurance, you have ship-to-shore communications. There are an enormous amount of bills to be paid, and we have some lads here that'll maybe give some details of that, Fergal, you know.
How much is available for a trawler that comes in here and decides to tie up for the month, and how does that equate with the costs?
We'll start at the lower end. An 8-metre boat, right, which is around 25 to 26 feet, is given €500 for the month. That's €125 for the week. So you can multiply that for the year and then, as I said, try and work out the cost of maintaining that boat for the year. It wouldn't pay for the paint, you know, or getting the boat done up. So there's varying different degrees based on the size of boats. So an inch could mean you get a doubling. I think it goes from 2,000 to 4,000. We suggested to the minister to follow what the French industry is doing in France, which is to look at the earnings of the boat throughout the year, and the months that they are tied up, they get 30% of their gross earnings last year. Because, as the minister knows, fishermen don't earn a constant same earnings throughout the year. As we said, the bad weather in January, February, December, boats didn't earn. So you couldn't equate that to this time of the year where boats are catching more fish and we're not reflecting what's happening on the ground, you know.
When you say 30% of the gross intake, that is you take what the trawler earns over the year and then you get paid 30% of that.
Yeah, and you break it down then for the tie-up period. So if the tie-up period was for March last year, you'd look at what the earnings of that boat was in March last year and you divide that by 30%. The tie-up period as well that's been proposed is a month. It's just too long. Vessels can't take that amount of time out of operating. Anything could change within 3 weeks. They say a week is a long time in politics. Well, a month is just too long in fishing. We want a system that will help organise our markets, give us the tools to be able to get our boats to fish to meet the demand of the markets, and then they'll get a fair return. If you offload too much produce onto the market, in any market, you're going to collapse the price of that market. And that's just business. So we're trying to put in a measure and be assisted by our government to help our fishing industry to survive this COVID-19 by listening to the industry and doing what's being done in France and that's being looked at in other countries. There is no point in putting in whatever best intentions you have if it's not going to meet the objective of what it set out to do.
We're going over to look at some of these boats.
Okay. Yeah.
With the storms last weekend, almost all the fleet was tied up in Castletown Bay. I went aboard a few of the trawlers, was shown around and met some of the skippers.
Wow. Damien Turner, I'm the chairman of the Aerosolton West Fish Producers Organisation, also the skipper of the fishing vessel Rosha Katrina.
We're here. You've just been out for a couple of days. How's it been going for you? You came in because of the storm.
We did. We came back in yesterday afternoon. We just got in ahead of the weather. We only had 3.5 days fishing. Fishing was good. It's just the weather. We couldn't work in what's coming up, you know.
Yeah.
It's too dangerous.
Damien, tell me something about your boat. We're here on the bridge. It's an incredible amount of technology.
Yes, she's a very well-rigged vessel, in fairness. There's years and years of work gone into her to get her to this state that she's in, the condition. We're very pleased with her. The wheelhouse here, you see, there's many, many screens. This was an average. You have communication equipment here. There's fishing equipment, communications. I've got some money to run. And that was just talking about maybe 150,000 euros worth of equipment.
Really?
Yeah.
That's just
besides
the boat.
Just inside the wheelhouse there. Yeah. Yeah.
You have an extraordinary array of screens. You know, maybe about 15 or 20 screens. What are they telling you? What are they showing you?
Yeah, but some screens will be obviously radars. A lot of equipment inside the wheelhouse. We'll have a backup. You have your main. You'll have a backup because let's say you can't. Exactly, you know, something breaks down, you need a backup, you know. So a lot of stuff will be repeated. There'll be 2 radars, there'll be 2 chart plotters, maybe more. There'll be CCTV cameras all over the vessel for the engine room, for watching lads on the deck, you know.
Yeah, so they're all safety things. So you have a view of everybody.
You have a view of everybody. There's a lot of safety gear. They'll have all the alarm systems up here, bilge alarms, you know, for the engine room, fish holes. Fire alarms all over the vessel, so there's a lot of safety equipment up here as well, you know.
What's your typical fishing year?
My typical fishing year, well, we always hope to do roughly about 43 trips a year. More of them trips could be roughly 5-6 days. The rest of the time is either tied up with weather or maintenance. Like usually with this vessel, we'll always try and schedule maintenance for the bottom end of the year, November, December time. Mm-hmm. Like last year we went into dry dock, and that's when you do all your maintenance, painting. This vessel, there was new plates went into our last year's, the safety of the part of the hull. There's new propeller shafts, so it's constantly every year there's something coming up.
What are you catching and how are you catching them?
Well, this vessel is known as a Seinet vessel. I think there's only 12 Seinet vessels in the country, you know. It's just a different method of fishing, you know. And we'd be targeting hake, whiting, haddock, to a lesser extent, flatfish, you know. That'd be our main target species.
How does the Seinet work?
It's just the method of saying it's like herding fish. It's like we shoot a big circle with a net in the middle and we tow very, very slowly and we ropes either side and net behind. And we basically herd the fish in. So the fish is actually only really caught in the last 15 minutes. Okay. You know, we have very, very short toes. You know, it's just a different method of fishing. There's many different methods of fishing. You have trawling, seining, gill netting. We just happen to be a seiner. Summertime, you could see us covering many, many miles, maybe 200-300 miles in a week. They'd be back and forth in the south coast, further south, further north. Last year, we fished Rockall, which is obviously a long ways from here, you know. To be honest, I'm much for what we call local grounds, you know, rather than having to steam up there. But at the time of the year, it was just necessary that we went up there for quota reasons and whatever, you know.
How does the quota work for somebody who mightn't know?
Every month, we'd be issued with a set amount of quotas on each species.
Does that depend on the size of your boat? Do you have to have a licence? Do you pay for that licence?
Yeah, well, every commercial fishing boat in this country has to be licensed. And then your quotas depend on the size of the vessel as well. So each species then, every month, there's a meeting, a quota management meeting. They'll decide and advise the minister on what quotas to issue. And they look at what's available for the rest of the year. And each one to be given out then, hey, it could be so many tons, haddock so many tons. And that's monitored every month. And as the year goes on, we're using more, so we'll be getting less and less, you know.
This COVID crisis has brought huge issues for you because the markets have more or less halved or even more?
The biggest problem is actually the uncertainty in the markets. You know, we're going to see, we actually don't really know. You know, we have our quotas, we have to stick by them, so we go and fish them. But market-wise, we actually don't know because it keeps changing and changes rapidly. So we still have to do our trip, come in, and we actually won't know what we're going to gross or what the crew are going to make. But it's just an impossible task at the moment. So we're actually kind of fishing blind.
You go out fishing, you're gone for, you're just in actually, so you don't know whether or not you can sell the catch when you come in.
Yeah, I actually don't know at the moment. So we landed yesterday afternoon, so we're waiting now just to see what has happened. That
there's a government scheme to get you through all of this. Is it working?
No. The one is simple, big no. It's unrealistic. You know, I don't think, whatever figures they were given, how did they say them? You know, and I've been running boats for nearly 30 years, you know, and to expect a boat to say this size tie up for a full month for 6,000 is totally unrealistic. I don't think it's taken into account the fact that maintenance, you know, we as a business, we've obviously been tied up with bad weather. You know, fishing business is tied up with bad weather already. They made a COVID-19. So we have to work through that. But as a business, we have to think ahead. We're going to have bad weather again at the end of the year. It's going to come. It comes every year. So to tie up the vessel now, just for that small amount of money, is going to put us in serious financial difficulties later on.
Because you're still paying insurance. I can hear the engines running. They're still ticking over. You've crew still working on board.
Exactly. As you can see, as I said, we have engines running because you have to power the vessel. We have crew working aboard the boat. We're actually changing gear. You have to keep the safety gear up to date on the vessel. You know, and the whole, as you see the vessel, it's, you know, they're finely tuned machines and they have to be for safety wise, you know.
Are you going to stay fishing over the short term or are you going to take the tie up?
No, I certainly wouldn't be able to take the tie up. It's just totally unfeasible. It wouldn't, you know. So we just have to work with the co-op, work with the producer organisations. And what we really need is a proper scheme in place that is workable. So that certain sections of fleet are dispatched at certain times and we can make this workable. Because you still have to have supply to market. You know, we can't just stop up and have starve the market for a month. So you need to have the control measures of how the fleet go out. And that's the right and proper way to do it.
So that not all the fleet is going out at any one time, select boats are going out?
Select boats, and hopefully with the producer organisations and the co-ops and the sales agents, if we work together, we will know, you know, what boats are dispatched, like seiners, gill netters, trawlers, and we'll be able to control that measure. You know, far better than tying up for 1 month just to stop up. It is ridiculous, you know.
Damien, you're going to show me the logbook.
That's right, it's actually a laptop.
It's not a book.
Yeah, it's not a paper. We don't have paper books anymore. It's a laptop supplied by the SFPA. So normally before we go to sea, we have to do what they call a departure report. So we'll open it up and we'll send in details of the time we're going and what nets we've on board. Yeah. So all that detail is there. So we go to sea then, and every 24 hours at the end of our fishing day, we must put in what catch we have, what species we have aboard, the amounts of them, and the areas we're in. And that's sent straight away then. And
okay, that, so it's almost real-time reporting.
It's real-time reporting. So then on return, when we come back to port, we'll have all our catch report in. We send in what they call a hail message. When the vessel comes in, we do a return to port report to tell them that we're actually in. And as I said earlier on, our fish then goes into the Castletown Bay Fishermen's Co-op. That's weighed. We'll get the sheets back with all our weights and we must then enter all that in, species by species, areas we were in, and that is then sent out again. So there's constant real-time reporting. The activities of the vessel is constantly being monitored. Even where we are at sea, we're being monitored by another system called VMS, Vessel Monitoring System. So every couple of hours our position is being relayed out where we are as well. So yeah, it's a very regulated industry.
Then it was on to the next trawler, the Syracuse, where I met the skipper.
My name is Alan Carleton. I'm director of the Irish South and West, and this is my vessel that I skipper and part own, the Syracuse. And we're a twin rig fishing vessel for mostly monks and megs and whatever else we can catch at the time.
What do you mean, twin rig?
We tow two nets instead of one net because it's more efficient for the fuel we burn for bottom fish. And it's at least if you do damage to one net, you'll always have a bit of fish in the other net anyway.
Yeah. So these are nets, they go right down to the bottom.
Right down to the bottom.
It's quite a big boat. How big are the nets?
The nets are about 50 metres each on the ground. And they might be 2 metres high. We'd be Megrim now, which is white sole, is our last ship was our main target species because we're trying to fish to the market at the moment. It's one of the fish is that there's no problem to sell, that and monkfish, where other species there's a bigger problem, counted markets.
They're selling in fish shops, restaurants, hotels aren't open.
One of the biggest problems we have is at the moment all the boats are trying to fish to the market. Sometimes we come in, we're tossed inside for 4 or 5 days until the fish that is brought in is sold, because it's no good bringing in too much fish and not being able to sell it, because we've only so much quota, and if you come and bring in fish that's not sold, it's coming off your quota anyway and there's no money.
For a typical trip on Syracuse, what's the preparation? How many crew do you have? You have got to get provisions in, diesel, how much does that cost, and how long will you be out for?
Well, at the moment now we're doing kind of 6 day trips, which would be about over 3,000 a trip between fuel and food. That's not including insurance now and everything else, just for the basic trip.
The cheaper diesel at the moment makes a huge difference to you.
Yeah, at the moment the diesel is well down. Normally now the same trip would be €6,000 in expenses. Or maybe a bit more, depending time of the year. When the weather's fine, you don't need to drive the boat as hard. And when the weather's bad, you have to drive the boat a small bit harder. Obviously you're burning more fuel.
So every time you go out, it's a big financial decision for you.
Oh, it is, but it's the same for all the boats, the same size. Everyone has... you have to spend money to make money, unfortunately, this job. There's no money for nothing. And
how far offshore do you go?
It depends. Times of the year. We could be maybe 4 hours from the harbour. And other times we could be 15 or 16 hours from the harbour, depending where we're fishing. And the weather, if... Winter time, we tend to stick as closer to the port if we're only going to get 3 or 4 days. Obviously, you try and get as much fishing in as much time as possible. If the weather's fine, we'll go further where we think we might get a bit of extra fish. Some weeks you move around a lot. You might get a good fishing for a day, next thing to go quiet.
How do you determine where you're going to go?
Well, from talking to other boats is a big help. Years of experience. Times of the year you know there should be fish here. You're not always right. They don't always come back the same place every year, but some years within a couple of weeks fish might show up in some place for a while.
They migrate?
Yeah.
Even monkfish?
Everything migrates. I remember years ago my father got a place just outside here west of Bull Rock, about 15 miles, that was Lithgow in Markham Bay up off the north of Wales. And that was only in a couple of months. Only in a couple of months. And that's a flatfish. You'd think a flatfish wouldn't travel that far, but obviously they all do.
That's incredible.
It's incredible. We were shocked ourselves when we got the report afterwards how far the fish actually travels. Because we always thought place kind of stayed local, that they didn't move that far at all. We always knew monk and megrim, which are white sole, travel a good bit. But we always thought place and lemon sole and things like that kind of stuck around the same area, but obviously they don't.
What else do you catch? They're mostly flatfish you described to me. What else?
We get Johnny Dories, we get brill, we get turbot, which we're trying to stay away from now because obviously no restaurants open. They're a restaurant type fish more than a fish shop type fish because they're more expensive. Black sole will be another thing we target times of the year. We went out a couple of trips ago trying to target monk and we ended up getting hake, but that's because fish don't swim where you want them to swim normally.
Yeah.
It's the look of the draw what you get a lot of the time, but. Sometimes we get dogfish, which we can no longer bring in. You have to discard them, which were a handy fishery before, because you didn't have to gut them. All you had to do was wash them, and it was very easy work. Mm. But account of there being a shark subspecies now, you're prohibited from bringing them in at the moment.
We're here in Castledown Bay. Quota is a huge issue here because we have 10% of the quota of all the fish caught in Irish waters.
I'm not sure the exact figures, but I know we only have 5% of monkfish off our own waters. France have 50% of the monkfish off the Irish waters. Sorry, EU waters, when it suits people, it's EU waters. But when it's coming to sell fish the last few weeks, it's not EU markets at all. It's Irish markets, French and Spanish markets.
But at the moment, there seems to be an unofficial boycott of Irish fish in France and Spain.
Well, Spain, no. Spain is taking all our megrims, which is where they normally go anyway. And the way things are at the moment, with the markets up and down, we have to see after us when the co-op sells the fish on what we get. People not go out to eat in restaurants as much as they can't, only get takeaways. And I suppose people are eating less fish. I presume they're eating less fishing.
What do you think of the tie-up scheme?
Well, I was a bit disappointed for what came out of it, because we fill out a socio-economic link every year or every 2 years. All the boats do at different categories. So it's not where the people don't know how much we spend on doing repairs, and there's always maintenance ongoing to the boats because you have to keep them up for health and safety reasons alone. You have to paint the underneath of the water boat every year, which is special paint,
anti-fouling,
and otherwise you're burning too much fuel if there's a build-up of mussels and
sea squirts,
yeah.
The killer.
Yeah. And that has to be done every year or every 18 months, depending. Some years the growth isn't as much as other years, and you know, it's look at the draw with that, but it has to be done. And you have to change anodes. Even if the boat is not fishing, you have to change the anodes, because if you don't, the metal in the boat will trouble.
I just explained to people, an anode, you put it near the propeller, because in salt water where you have two metals meeting each other, they corrode. But an anode...
I know, it's 28 or 32 anodes we have all together on the boat. We have them on the nozzle, which goes around the propeller. It gives more towing power to a trawler. We have them on the rudder. And then as you go forward, we put on less. Obviously, there's less metal under the water there as well. And if they don't corrode, when you go up, you have something wrong someplace, which, thank God, hasn't happened to us yet. But
what would you like to see now, coming from the minister, from the department, over this COVID crisis?
They could do their figures, and some's a bit better. Like, other countries seem to get way better treatment. Like, for instance, the boats above Northern Ireland, from what I hear, some of the boats are getting 10,000 a month or more. Spanish boats, as far as I know, I think they're getting subsidised to fish. How much the subsidy is, I don't know. And the French boats, I think the majority of them are tied up, but they're getting a substantial sum to tie up. A way more substantial than here.
And we leave the last word in Castletown Bear to Patrick Murphy.
I'm looking out the wheelhouse window here now, and I'm standing at the wheel. And for a skipper to leave port, the first thing he's worried about is making sure that the boat is in a good enough mechanical so that it can go out and come back in safely, that the supplies and everything that he needs is on board the boat. And then he has the background noise of all the regulations that are coming at him, the books, the hours, where he's supposed to go, the amount of quota he's supposed to fish, how much quota he's allowed to bring in under landing obligation to make sure he'll have enough for the next trip. All the background noise that is facing that fisherman, they have the mental strength, I believe, more than an astronaut going into space with the amount of work that they have to inside their head. And that's steaming this vessel out into the wilds of the oceans outside, facing monstrous seas at times, and the unpredictability of what's on the seabed. You know, there's enough facing fishermen now without having this added torture of, once you come back into port, will your fish get sold? Will you get enough money to pay for your expenses and to have a decent wage for your crew members so that they'll continue to fish with you?
What do you want to see happen over this COVID, the tie-up of the money being spent, with the minister promising you this, that and the other, or nothing at all?
I've said this before and I'll say it again. This industry has enough problems and enough hardship facing it without to be adding anything else. So when the minister listens to us in all other areas, and when we do the quota sheets and everything else, we would be hoping he'd listen to us again now. And what he doesn't see is what these people who are fishing for 30 years see every day of their lives and know the costs. This isn't about putting money in their pockets. This is about giving them enough resources to be able to bounce back again when the COVID-19 ends. If that doesn't happen, we're going to do so much damage to our own coastal communities that need these boats, that need this industry to bring money into the country, to generate money for our nurses, our doctors, our school teachers, everybody else. We need this money to come into the country, to be spent inside in this country. Money goes through 10 hands, I was told by an economist. It gets spent 10 times by 10 different people, the same euro. that generates movement in our economy, gets the wheels turning. If you take the likes of fishing out of that, you're going to be in a very bad shape in a few years' time. We need our minister to look at the bigger picture here, listen to everybody inside the industry, and come and meet us and talk. And I know his job is difficult, but I have faith in him that he will go back to Europe and get extra money, or from our Taoiseach and from this government. We have to make sure that we have a viable fishing industry into the future. It's in jeopardy now, and everybody's seeing it, and we just need people to listen and come back and talk to us.
A thanks to Patrick Murphy and to everybody in Castle Danbaer. And as I said at the beginning, Minister Michael Creed and his department have defended the tie-up scheme.